Robert Bovall's The Orion Mystery, published in 1994, introduced all of us to a highly original and very famous star correlation theory about the Giza pyramids in Egypt, and sent a huge shockwave over the controversy throughout the scientific community. Some of those effects still felt today. Tonight we talk about the Egypt Code, which not only develops this pyramid stars correlation, but also reveals an amazing grand unified plan. What is that plan? Up next, Robert Bovall on Coast to Coast AM. Robert Bovall was born in Egypt in 1948. In 1989, he published a study which proposed that the layout of the three Giza pyramids and their relative position to the Nile was intended to mirror the layout of the three stars in Orion's belt and their relative position to the Milky Way, the thesis now known as the Orion Correlation Theory. Tonight, we talk about his latest work, The Egypt Code, Robert Bovall. Robert, how are you?
Good morning, George.
Good evening for you. That's right, exactly. Hey, did I ever tell you that my father was born in Cairo?
No.
Yep, back in 1923, they were on their way to the United States, and Grandma made a pit stop. And
are they Egyptians?
Yeah, no, I guess he's not Egyptian. No, no, we're Christian Middle East, but primarily Lebanese.
I had a feeling about this, George, because of your name.
Uh-huh.
Your surname?
Yep.
Can you pronounce that?
I pronounce it Nouri. Some people say Nouri, but...
Because I thought it was Nouri. It's Nouri,
it means the light,
name.
Right?
It means light.
Yep.
That's right.
Exactly. But that's where he was born. And he stayed there 6 years, and then he came over to the United States.
There you are.
You were born there, too.
Yes. I was born in the city of Alexandria, the port of Alexandria. I've just spent 3 years in Cairo. I've been writing the Egypt Code there, the book that we'll talk about tonight. And I've just started another book. But in the last few months, I've moved to Spain. I'm in England at the moment.
Now, is Omar Sharif still running around Cairo?
Well, he's there. I don't think he's running around.
He's not running much anymore, is he?
he's there. And he's quite, in a way, involved with the antiquities, because one of his big buddies is the chairman of the antiquities.
Is that Zahi Hawass? Yeah.
Yeah.
We've been trying to get Zahi on the program, but I'm afraid if I talk about some of my theories about the Giza pyramids, he may hang up on me, Robert.
I don't know if he'll hang up on you. I don't think he'll be on the same wavelength, so to speak.
Let's go back a little bit and talk about the original Orion Belts theory and how you saw that.
Yeah. Well, as we just said, I was born in Egypt, and being in the city of Alexandria, it's 200 kilometers from Cairo, and in my days, it was quite a trip. So I hadn't seen the pyramids till I was about 12. The first time I saw them was when my father took me there. And like everybody who has their experience with these monuments for the first time, I was dumbstruck. And in those days, they were much more impressive, because the city didn't encroach. As you may know, the city now of Cairo is very near the pyramids. But in those days, they stood out like icebergs out of the sand, and I was dumbstruck. And even as a child, I just couldn't understand why they thought they were tombs. You know, why it didn't make sense to me. So it kind of stuck in my mind for through my adolescence. And but really, I never thought I'd get involved with them as much as I did. But it all happened when I was in, of all places, I was in Saudi Arabia. I was working as an engineer.
Okay.
My previous life before being a writer was as a construction engineer. And I was under contract with a foreign firm working in Saudi Arabia. And in the weekends, we'd go out in the desert. I worked in the city of Riyadh, which is a very... Again, in those days, I'm talking like the early 80s.
I see, and that was the boom period, wasn't it?
It was a big boom period, yes. And in fact, the reason I was sent there, it was the big oil boom, and Saudi Arabia was expanding tremendously, and they were just about building everything, airports and new housing projects, hospitals. I was with a French consortium, and we were building a series of hospitals. But come weekend, which there is Friday, as you know, in the Muslim world, we'd get out of the city, mainly because it became very oppressive. There was all sorts of restrictions. So we'd go out in the desert, and very often we'd camp. Wonderful deserts outside Saudi Arabia, some of the best in the world.
Were they safe, Robert?
Yes, 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 okay. They were safe. We'd drive about an hour or so, and once out of the city, you were literally in the open desert. But when I say desert, it's not your sort of flat, sandy areas. There was wonderful canyons and rocky mesas and resembling Sedona a bit, without the trees. If you will.
Right, right, exactly.
Yeah, this sort of reddish kind of ground.
But very hot, though, wasn't it?
Very, very hot, yes. No, we didn't go in the summer. The temperatures can reach 45, even 50 degrees centigrade. But we used to go out in the winters and early autumn. So there, one of these strange nights. Now, I must say that the climate in Saudi Arabia, especially in central Saudi Arabia, is short of the summer, I mean, which is very hot, is a wonderful climate. It's very clear, rare, hardly any rain, and absolutely no pollution. So the skies are absolutely crystal clear.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic thing to see. Even better than the ocean, because the desert is dry, so you get this absolutely spotless, crystal clear sky.
Millions of stars, I bet. Looking up, peering up.
Yeah, I'll correct you a bit there, but yeah, thousands rather. I mean, they say that the naked eye can pick up about 3,000 stars on a hemisphere. But what is striking is that this 3,000 stars that you pick up with the naked eye, because the sky vault above you appears so near, it looks like you can almost touch it. It's a very strange sensation. And it looks like there's a whole mass of sparkling objects above you. And one of the features that you don't normally see in cities is the Milky Way. It's something that people get very surprised if they come out in the desert and they've been living in cities and see the Milky Way. They're all baffled because they say, well, how come we never saw it? Well, the reason you don't in cities, of course, is because of the light pollution.
Too much glare.
Yeah, you know, it's just a candle will already remove a few hundred stars.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you have a couple of bulbs around you, then only the very bright top magnitude stars are visible, and the Milky Way disappears. But with no lights at all, you know, if you're way out in the deep desert, then everything appears. And, of course, it has to be a moonless night because the moon acts as a big bulb, if you like. So it was one of those nights. Now, the coincidence was, George, that I had just been to Egypt to visit my mother. And I did two things there. I stopped in Cairo, and I decided to go and visit the Cairo Museum.
Okay.
And I'm talking like 1982. In those days, long before digital cameras and cell phones and faxes, and there I was in the Cairo Museum with my old camera with a black and white film. I had an Olympus camera in those days.
Uh-huh.
I was very proud of it. And I'm wandering around, and I entered what is known as Room 42. For those who might one day visit the Cairo Museum, don't miss Room 42 because it's the room that houses all the artifacts from the pyramid builders. And in this room, there still is a photograph on the wall, which was taken by the Egyptian Air Force in 1945 of the pyramids directly overhead. Now, it's one of the strange things that I had never seen a photograph of the pyramids overhead. I mean, today, the Internet is full of them.
That's sure.
Because of Google Earth
right.
And so forth. But in those days, it was a kind of rare thing to find. And it struck me that it had never occurred to me that there was strange layouts of the three pyramids of Giza. What I saw was the two large pyramids, the built by Cheops, the Great Pyramid, and Khafre, or Khefren in some books, the second largest pyramid. They're almost of equal size, and they're on a diagonal. The pyramids have a square base, but the diagonal joined them up. However, what puzzled me and stuck in my mind was that the third pyramid, which was much smaller, was offset from this diagonal, offset to the left.
And there was no reason for it.
Well,
it didn't appear to be, yeah.
Now, again, I happen to be working in Saudi Arabia as a setting out engineer. That was my specialty. A setting out engineer is that man who carries all these instruments and theodolites and dumpy levels and sighting instruments.
And keeps everything straight.
That's right. So, you know, it's I always give this analogy. You know when you go and have dinner at somebody's place and you're sitting at the table and across you on the wall is a painting and it's skew width. It's not straight.
It drives me nuts, by the
That's
way.
That's right. It drives everybody.
You want to go up there and just kind of tweak it back.
That's right. I mean, you can't wait for the host to go and make coffee so you can run there and tweak it back. You know? Well, it's the same thing with looking at the map of the pyramid. You just want to take that third pyramid and push it back in alignment, you know, which, of course, you can't. And, you know, it's one of those things that it stuck in my mind, being of that kind of predisposition. You know, I like to see things straight and neat. And you'd expect them to be, because there's nothing more geometrical than a pyramid. You know,
exactly.
It's a perfect geometrical shape. I knew that they were individually aligned to the cardinal directions. It's very obvious that the first two are on a diagonal. So why this anomaly? Why a smaller pyramid, and why was it offset? So I returned to Saudi Arabia, and with that in my mind, and I had a lot of friends who were also in the construction business. I had architects and surveyors and engineers. And so what I did several photograph copies of this layout. I had taken a picture at the museum, and I passed it around. And we had a meeting, and I asked each of them, "Well, what do you think?" And they all were convinced that there was a plan. That they were looking at
that it wasn't a mistake, right?
Yeah, I mean, you had three monuments of equal design; they were all on the same site.
Obviously sophisticated.
Obviously very sophisticated,
yeah.
And here are the questions that they popped up. Well, first, of course, why is the third pyramid offset? And the other question, which puzzled many of them, was why is it smaller? They all had heard that they were built by megalomaniac pharaohs who wanted to demonstrate their power and wealth and so forth. So why was the third pyramid smaller? Why would the builder of the third pyramid advertise that he was smaller?
That's right. Why would they scrimp on the third one, right?
It's a bit like parking your little mini car next to a Rolls Royce.
See, but we also don't know, Robert, or do we, which one was made first?
Well, yes, that's what I'm coming to, because it just didn't make sense from what we read from the Egyptological texts, from Egyptologists. It didn't fit. So the question was not only why was it offset, but why was it smaller? And the only answer we could come up with, which was not the answers that the Egyptologists were coming up with. The Egyptologists were saying, well, the pharaoh perhaps was less powerful, or perhaps he had less funds, or perhaps he died early. And all these didn't make sense. I mean, there's no way that the pharaoh would have known that he was going to die early and said, I'm going to build a smaller pyramid. And so the only thing that made sense is that it wasn't belonging to an individual pharaoh, that the whole thing was a project, and that there was none of this ego issue.
Right.
So that was one that we all felt was the right answer. Therefore, we were looking at a plan, and this raised the question even more, well, if it is a plan, then why is it smaller and offset? And that was the thing that rang in my mind for weeks. And as fate would have it, one of these friends of mine said that he had a book that he had bought on his holiday to Egypt, and we'd have a look in there. And it was one of these coffee table books with a lot of lovely pictures. And one of the pictures was a photograph of the of a pyramid of the fifth dynasty. Now, the pyramids we're talking about, the Giza pyramids, are fourth dynasty.
Fourth dynasty, okay.
And they're dated to about 2500 BC. One of the peculiarities about these pyramids, and hence why we were asking these questions, is that these Giza pyramids do not contain inscriptions. They're totally bare of inscriptions. I'm sure some listeners may correct me there, because they did find graffiti in the Great Pyramid, in the so-called relief chambers.
But
I'll get to that a bit later.
And that probably came later.
Yes.
Okay.
It's not so sure, but I mean, I'll talk about this later.
Okay.
The point is, there was no official graffiti at all, and this was another puzzling question, which kind of went against the idea that they were built by megalomaniac pharaohs. Now, if you were a megalomaniac pharaoh wanting to build a pyramid to tell the world forever that you managed to do this, then why wouldn't you put your name on it? You know, I usually say, you know, it's a bit like an author who publishes a bestseller and the publisher forgets to put his name on the cover. You know, it doesn't make sense.
Exactly.
You know, even if you don't have a megalomaniac ego, you'd still want to see your name there. So all these things didn't fit. And anyway, coming back to the picture I saw, it was from the pyramid texts, which are in pyramids of the fifth dynasty, so the dynasty that immediately follows Giza. Now, these pyramids, in contrast to the Giza pyramids, are full of texts. And there was a caption to the photograph, and they quoted one of the texts, and as fate would have it, it said that the king wanted to go to the constellation of Orion. And that thought came in my mind.
Uh-huh.
Could there be a link? Could there be something to do with this? But you know, I was working happily in my project, and I didn't really take it further. Until we were on that night in the desert, and I was with a group of friends. One of them, a Frenchman who was with me, happened to be a navigator. And had studied the stars and how to navigate by the stars. And we're sitting there on the dunes in the middle of the night, and suddenly he points to Orion. And he says, you know, one of the stars that they use in navigation in wintertime is the star Sirius. And Sirius, I knew, was the important star for the Egyptians.
Right.
Again, I'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah.
And he said, you know how you find Sirius, if you know, among all these thousands of stars? It is the brightest, but there are other bright stars. But he said, if you look at Orion, and if you look at Orion's belt, and you'll see that the belt is like, it forms a line. If you project the line backwards, you'll hit the star Sirius. So there am I looking at these stars, And he said, you see, it's also next to the Milky Way, and sure enough, there was this band of light that I could see. And then, in an afterthought, and you know, which changed my life, he said, well, the three stars of Orion's belt are not quite in a line.
Stay with that thought, Robert. We'll be right back as we talk about the Egypt Code. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. October 31st is a Friday night, and that's Halloween, and that's also Ghost to Ghost. If you'd like to submit a ghost story, and we'll call you back, just email us at ghoststory1, that's the number one, ghoststory1@yahoo.com, and please only put your name and phone number in the subject line in addition to your story. Later, Robert Bavala, get your take on how old you think the Giza pyramids are and how you think they may have been constructed. But let's go back to the alignment now of Orion's belt. And so it was off a little bit.
Yeah, I'll pick up where I left off. The man who was pointing at them said Well, they're not in a straight line. The smaller one at the top, the less bright one, is a bit offset to the left. And bang, the proverbial penny dropped in my mind. I mean, I had a flash of the image of the Giza necropolis and mixing or overlapping with these stars. And that's when it all started. And I recall calling my wife, who was still sleeping in the sleeping bag. And I was very excited because I had seen something that I've never heard before, you know, and it puzzled me because it was so obvious once you...
It made sense, didn't it?
It made sense, and I'll tell you why. Because not only because of the pyramid text that indicate that the king was very, very linked to those particular stars, but the and also the fact that the stars were in a position relative to the Milky Way, that they were literally at this diagonal angle to the Milky Way, and on the right side of the Milky Way, in exactly the same way the pyramids were relative to the Nile, but what really clinched it for me, I discovered later, was that there was a shaft inside the Great Pyramid, and I'll get to that later with the other shafts, but there was one shaft in particular that was known since the early 60s to have pointed to these stars of Orion's Belt. So the pyramid, the Great Pyramid, if you like, and the Giza Necropolis was, in a sense, literally attached to the stars, like an umbilical cord, if you like.
And I agree with you, Robert. I think it is so keenly obvious.
One of those very obvious things once you
look at it, and then you know a little bit of the history behind the pyramids, you can just look up and see. Now, the alignment themselves, is the alignment of the pyramids now, you know, because stars move, but they move ever so slowly in our time, at least. Was the alignment done? That's what they could see at the time. Is that alignment still the same today or in 5,000 years or gosh knows how long?
Yeah.
Did it change over that
yeah,
period?
Let me explain something here. For the benefit of the listeners, I was going to say the benefit of the readers.
Well, they are readers too, because they're going to get the Egyptian code.
The planet on which we all stand and live is a globe, as we all know, and it has several motions. Two of these motions are very familiar to everybody. The Earth rotates on its axis, and you get the effect of night and day. Then we all know that it revolves around the sun, and you get the effects of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when I say the effects of the seasons, is that the sun appears to be at different altitudes through the year, hence you get the summer and the winter and so forth. But the Earth has a third motion, and this motion is known as the precession of the equinoxes.
Yes.
And basically this motion, to put it as simply as possible, is that the Earth wobbles like a spinning top, very, very slowly.
Like an egg.
Yeah, and for those who want another metaphor, it gyrates like a belly dancer.
a good belly dancer. Because we've seen, being in the Middle East, and we've seen some bad belly dancers, Robert, haven't we?
We have, yes.
Yes, we have.
They still gyrate. Anyway, so this very, very slow gyration, this very slow wobble, gives the Earth the third motion. And really what happens is that over the period of time, which is about 26,000 years for one cycle, the whole celestial sphere appears to gyrate. In fact, we're the ones who are moving, but it, from this perspective, from Earth, it gives the impression that the celestial sphere above us is gyrating. And therefore, the position of the constellations appear to change. Not the pattern. The patterns are the same. Now, the reason is that the stars are very, very, very far away. And although the stars move, they have what we call a proper motion. This proper motion is so small because of the distance that the pattern of constellations hardly change. They will change over millions of years, but for the period we're talking about, there is no change at all. And therefore, the Orion constellation and other constellations appear to us today the same as they appeared to the ancient Egyptians. The only difference is that they would have been at different altitudes.
Ah, okay.
That means today, I don't know about from where you are, and I can't calculate it.
Well, I'm in Los Angeles.
Too. Los Angeles. Well, it shouldn't be. Do you happen to know your latitude by any chance?
Are you kidding me?
Got you there, George.
Yes, you did.
I would imagine that you're somewhere around 30-something, without looking at the map. But anyway, seen from Cairo, okay, because I know Cairo very well, we're at latitude 30 in Cairo, and I don't want to speak science jargon here, so I'll just keep it in plain terms.
Okay.
If you watch these stars today, and they reach the middle of the sky in the south, at what we call the meridian, at their highest point, their culmination,
mm-hmm.
today they would appear at 60 degrees altitude. All right?
All right.
Were you to see them at the time of the pyramids, which is 2,500 BC, which is roughly 4,500 years from now, they would have been much lower at 45 degrees. Oh. And were you to see them even earlier, they would be even lower. So the stars, in a way, are once we know how to calculate precession, and if we have something pointing at them, so if today I would build something that points at Orion's belt at 60 degrees, and then somebody would come 5, 6,000 years from now or 10,000 years from now, he would know when I build the monument because of the movement of the stars. It acts like a vernier scale. So having said this, the pattern of the stars, the image of the stars, the pattern of the constellation of Orion was the same for the pyramid builders. The only difference is that it was lower. It was lower, and it, hence why we know that these shafts, the shaft I just mentioned a while ago, pointed to Orion's belt, because if you go to the date of the pyramid, which is about 2,500 BC, and you calculate the position of these stars, they're in alignment with the shaft. Now, this was well known. So we have the pyramid texts that tell us the king wants to go to these stars. We have the shafts pointing to these stars. You know, like we say, it looks like a duck. It quacks like a duck. It must be a duck.
And by the way, 34 degrees north here in LA.
Ah, there well, there would be then a little bit
I knew lower. That all along, Robert. I was just holding back.
That means you see them slightly lower in Los Angeles than we see them in Cairo.
All right.
All right. Now, having said all this, there is something else that happens to the stars with precession. They not only are lower or higher, depending on the time you see them, but they tend to rotate, in other words, because of this gyration. So the angle that the belt stars make today, surprisingly, is the same as the pyramids on the ground. But the angle that the stars made when the pyramid was supposed to have been built in 2,500 BC...
That was different.
...was different. So although the image is the same, it's a bit like holding a photograph of yourself straight, and then you slowly twist it around. It's still the same photograph, but the angle is different.
A different angle. How long do you think it took to build those three pyramids?
Well, we've got a problem here because coming back to this angle, what happened in my studies eventually when I wrote the Orion Mystery and so forth, I got in touch with Graham Hancock. You've had Graham on
of
your
course.
Show many times,
yes.
I guess.
Yes. Yes.
Indeed, we talked together once in 1996. I don't know if you recall this.
You were together with Art.
With Art, yes, and there was this big controversy at the time about the Hall of Records.
Yes, exactly, with Edgar Cayce's prediction.
That's right, and we had...
we'll talk a little bit about that tonight.
We had a variety of people calling in. There was Richard Hoagland and Boris Said. Anyway...
Richard's sending me messages about you now, saying hello, by the way.
Oh, please, give him my best, and if he's hearing, I...
He's hearing. He's listening right now.
Oh, good. So, Richard, drop me a line.
There you go.
Okay. Anyway, coming back to all this, The angle that the stars made at the time that the Egyptologists said the pyramids were built did not fit what we saw on the ground. So the image was the same, but the angle wasn't the same. And again, a bit like this painting on the wall, you wanted to twist those stars and bring them back in line or move the pyramids. Now, you of course can't move the pyramids, and you can't move the stars. Well, in many ways, you can move the stars if you go back in time or forward in time.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, the idea came, which is one of those moments in intellectual thinking, is whether you're going to get blocked by the consensus, by the established view, or whether you're going to take the leap. And Graham and I said, well, I mean, we're all getting stuck on this date of 2500 BC. Why don't we see if there was a time when these stars fitted the pattern on the ground.
Perfectly. That's right.
And therefore, I did some calculations, and I found that if you went to 10,500 BC, which incidentally was the beginning of the cycle. Now, this was very exciting because the Egyptians spoke of these stars as if they represented or were identified to the god Osiris. The god Osiris was the god of resurrection, but he was also the god that became on earth the first pharaoh, and they call this the first time, the beginning of time. And here were these stars at the beginning of the cycle, matching exactly what we had on the ground in 10,500 BC. The whole thing clicked into shape, and that to me was an very exciting for two reasons. One is that it pushed the date way back, and it also rang a bell because I knew of the Casey predictions, and as many of your listeners would know, Casey had had a trance, many trances, but one of them in which he said that the Hall of Records that was supposedly planted at Giza by the Atlanteans.
Near the Sphinx, right?
Under the Sphinx, yes, or near the Sphinx, was put there in 10,500 BC.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see all the bells ringing here. Now, I'll be honest with you, I was not into the psychic side of this research at all. But I couldn't help thinking, what an amazing coincidence.
It really is. And, you know, I think eventually you realize that coincidences may not occur. There could be more to this than people think.
Well, I mean, I am utterly persuaded now, and I'll tell you why as we go along, because there's been much more evidence coming forth since I wrote these books. But I'm utterly persuaded that the date of 10,500 BC is definitely a date that is grafted, that is locked into the Giza necropolis.
There could not have been a cycle, Robert, let's say 50,000 BC, where the alignment was the same? Or was it 10,000?
Yes, it could be.
There
could be, but I mean, like I always say, I'm having enough trouble with 10,000.
I know, but I mean,
is
it possible, though, that that Giza could be that old, 50,000 BC.
You know, the funny thing about Giza is that because there is no inscription, and because we're dealing with natural stone, the pyramids are built with a natural stone, and we have two types of stone there. We have limestone or sandstone that is locally from the area, and we have granite, which is brought from Upper Egypt.
Yes.
And because they're just made out of these two materials, these two stones, there is no way to date them. Now, there has been some carbon dating, and there's been some conflicting dates coming up. But in my view, and I can tell you, I've had long discussions in the last few weeks with my brother, who is an architect. My brother, like me, is a very keen researcher on the pyramid.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he's an architect. I'm a builder. So together we can discuss all the issues concerning the construction of these monuments.
Well, you two probably were reincarnated from that time period. You never know.
If we are, I'm the boss. No, he's a great guy. He's older than I, and he's an excellent architect, and he happens to have that interest and open mind. So I can tell you one thing, because I'm sure we're going to get to talk about this. Unlike me, he is very much open to the idea that we're dealing with an alien intervention.
Oh, really?
He is, yes. I should have had him on the show with me here. Unfortunately, he's in Spain.
Well, but you can paraphrase later some of his thoughts and beliefs on why he thinks.
Yes, I'll
that.
Tell you why. I mean, but I must say that I am not. Not because I'm not open to the idea. I'm open to anything. I think one should keep an open mind about anything.
Yes.
We live in a very mysterious universe, and I think, you know, like I always say in my lectures, if we were told the truth and what it really is, we'd be even more surprised than the wildest of imaginations. You know, this is a very strange universe we live in.
So is it possible, though, would you agree that the Giza pyramids are at least 10,500 B.C., but maybe even farther back?
I think that part of the necropolis is the Greek word for the Giza mortuary area. I think parts of it are almost likely to be of 10,500 BC or even earlier. The parts that I'm thinking of, now, it's not just the pyramids that stand there. We have, of course, the Sphinx. And as you know, there's been a huge controversy about the age of the Sphinx with John West and Robert Schock.
Yes, absolutely.
Since I've just mentioned these two very good friends of mine, we did a conference in Milan a few months ago. It was lovely to see them again. And I'm seeing Robert Schock again in Dubai, in the Middle East. We're giving a conference in there in November for the first time in the Middle East. So people in the Middle East who may be hearing, I don't know if they get your show. But coming back to all this, there's been I was interested not only in the astronomical dating that I was getting, it's 10,500 BC, but of course I knew that that John and Robert had come up with the same idea using geology. They were dating the Sphinx far earlier than the Egyptologists. And although Robert Schock was being conservative, being an academic, he was trying to stay within the boundaries, he nonetheless had to give it a date of a few thousand years older than the Egyptologists. Whereas John West felt that we were dealing with a much, much older monument. Now, there are, other than the Sphinx, there is a variety of what we call mortuary temples and valley temples. There are three of these still more or less standing. They're very dilapidated. They're badly ruined, but they're still there. There's two next to the Sphinx, one right in front of the Sphinx, and one next to the Sphinx.
And does it look much older?
They look very, very old. Anybody who goes at Giza will immediately notice that these temples, the blocks, now, there's two very strange things about these temples.
Hold on right there, Robert. We'll be right back. We're going to take this break. Robert Bovall, our special guest, the Egypt Code. He's live from the United Kingdom. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be right back.